You're listening to audio from Liberty Church Coomera. For more information about our family of churches, visit us online at liberty.church.
I'm Sam. I'm a pastoral assistant at the church, and it's my privilege to get to read God's word. So if you want to open up at Ecclesiastes chapter 1, I'm going to be reading all of chapter 1. Hear now God's word. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north, around and around goes the wind. And on its circuits, the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. But what has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing which it is said, see, this is new? It has been already in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of latter things yet to be among those who come after. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem. And I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I said in my heart, I've acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this also is but a striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. This is the word of God.
What is life all about on this little bluish green, getting a bit more brown with global warming happening, planet spinning around the universe? What makes life worth living? We're going to be in a series in Ecclesiastes. For the next few weeks, we're going to be exploring that question. Purpose, meaning, all these kind of philosophical thoughts, however, are very street-level accessible. They will get at the heart. They will reach us in ways that maybe we didn't realize. I was speaking with Pastor Will early this week, and we remarked, how do you teach through a book you can't even spell? 4 years ago, I pegged Ecclesiastes as one of my favorite books of the Bible. Now that I have to preach it, the truth is the relationship is a bit stretched. We're coming under some turmoil. So I want to introduce us first to the setting of Ecclesiastes, the speaker, and then we'll look at the substance. So the setting is somewhat bleak. The world of Ecclesiastes is an honest book. It's going to deal with the harsh realities of life, like injustice, oppression, things like death. If it was a song, it would be set to a minor key. Contrary to the Lego movie, everything is not awesome. In fact, everything is pretty unawesome, painful, wearisome. In fact, one author said the message of the speaker in Ecclesiastes is this: life is difficult, then you die. Ecclesiastes is the kind of world that isn't shiny, but it's tarnished, like the world is one giant casino, and the house is rigged against you for you to lose. Yet you and I keep playing. If Ecclesiastes had a design color, it would be black, shades of gray, variants of dark green moss. There are no pinks, no blues, no neon lights. It is the cold alleyway in a city. Ecclesiastes is the damp, quiet corner in a cave. It is less 11 p.m. when the club is pumping and more 4 a.m. when the lights have been turned on and you see yourself on the dance floor, the spilt drinks, the sticky surface, and the luminous person who now stands in front of you. Yikes. If Ecclesiastes were a movie, it's one where the hero doesn't save the day, the princess isn't rescued, the relationship ends, and the Jamaican bobsled team do not make it to the Olympics. The last of which is obviously the most depressing. Ecclesiastes is in every way, shape, and form anti-Disney. So is it a book for us? Well, I think it is. At least one of these books that help us, if you like things, to tell it how it really is. Don't give me nice platitudes. Don't try and cover it up. How is it? This book resonates with us. It's a book for us because it will contain questions and longings and aches of the soul. For people who may wonder if God understands the complexities of life. If you ever wonder, does God see the despair and the difficulties and the treacheries that I experience? The paradoxes, the irrationalities, the felt contradictions of life. This is a book for you. Why do people like Zimbabwe's tyrant Robert Mugabe get 95 years on this earth? One of my closest friend's nephew gets diagnosed with a mitochondrial disease and barely makes it to 4. How do we explain that? How do we account for that kind of a world? Into this chasm of confusion steps Ecclesiastes. The genre locates it in wisdom literature, the Bible, so alongside our Proverbs and Song of Solomon and Job and possibly the Psalms as well. If Proverbs communicates how the world ought to work hard, save money, be set up, everything generally works out well, Ecclesiastes comes along and says, oh, that's very cute. Let me tell you a thing or two. Well, with this setting, we now turn to the speaker, and he's introduced to us here in the following way. The words of the preacher, son of David, king of Jerusalem. Now, the word for preacher here is the Hebrew Kohelet, and this is a word I want you to become familiar with because we're going to refer to our friend Kohelet by that name from time to time. We may also call him the teacher. The word in its essence is one who gathers together either people for instruction or words. So we have a gatherer, the preacher. And we hear at the outset, we begin to realize that there are actually two voices that are speaking in the book of Ecclesiastes. We have Kohelet, who is the teacher, but Kohelet has been introduced to us by one term I think is helpful called the frame narrator. He is framing up the words of Kohelet to present to us here from verses 1 to 11, summarizing his work. And then we hear his voice again at the very end as he reflects on the teacher's words, what he has said and how he interprets them. Finishing with his famous line in verse 13, the end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God, keep his commands, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every evil deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. And it's here the frame narrator is directing, is showing, is pointing us to the meaning of this book, how we are to understand it. And the book, I think its ultimate meaning is this. It is wanting to expose us to the emptiness, empty pursuits in the world so that we may grab hold of the fullness of life with God. The frame narrator gets the last word, and he gets the first word, and he sets up the tradition of us hearing who hearing the words that Kohelet speaks. Which raises the question, who is Kohelet? Some of us might go, ah, King of Jerusalem, son of David, I know who this is. This is Solomon. Well, history and tradition did peg Solomon as the author of Ecclesiastes. However, as time goes on, particularly since the Reformation, there's been increasing evidence against the fact that Solomon is the author. The text itself simply does not say. It doesn't tell us who the writer is. So we cannot conclusively say it is Solomon. However, whilst we may not be able to identify Qohelet as Solomon, Qohelet certainly is characterized by someone who is what we might call Solomon-esque, having the characteristics and the attributes of someone great, powerful, prominent, wise like Solomon. With the setting in place, the speaker is now understood, we have the substance. So what is he saying? What does the book of Ecclesiastes begin to teach and tell us? Well, our frame narrator introduces the summary of Qohelet's word here in verse 2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. If you're reading along, you might have a translation NIV that says meaningless. Others might say futile. The word is hevel. Another great word for us to learn, hevel. We're going to be using hevel and Qohelet, and you're going to walk away with two bits of Hebrew up your sleeve, and that's what you can bring out next time you're trying to impress someone with the languages you speak. Now, what is hevel? Hevel, it literally means vapor or breath. You get a picture of like smoke or mist. It's used some 38 times in the book. Like mist, it's something that you can see, but you've got to grab it, it kind of disappears. And this rendering of the word hevel into vapor carries all these kind of nuances in how it's used. It can mean like fleeting and temporary and ephemeral, kind of passing away. When it's used in meaningless NIV, not that it is void of meaning, but rather that the meaning is something you cannot hold, slips through your fingers, trying to catch something that cannot be caught, vapor. So if you think of a cloud on a mountain, at one angle, it looks so dense. It looks like something you could step out and hold you. However, if you did, you would fall through. Vapor, mist, meaningless, vanity. It lacks substance. It's at odds with how things ought to work. It's a paradox. It's an enigma. It's what one commentator says is absurd. It's opposed to rationality. Hevel, the preacher says, characterizes all life this way. All is vanity, human life, joy, frustrations, life, youth, death, the being wise, the fools, pleasure, all these things, hevel, vanity. Well, all this vaporless vapor raises the question that the teacher asks in verse 3, doesn't it? If everything's vanity, if everything's hevel, there's no substance, so fleeting, ephemeral, it's gone, what does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? Listen, if everything we do slips through our hands, what's the point? What's the purpose? We're introduced to another phrase here, which he toils under the sun. Here under the sun, don't think someone tanning out in the rays at the beach. Think of this phrase that means all of human life in a broken world. Every action and activity under the sun, that which is observable, you can see and touch. It's really a pre-modern kind of secular view of the world under the sun. Does a person gain by all the toil under the sun? Have you ever asked this question of yourself? Perhaps you didn't frame it like this. Perhaps you asked the question, does it even matter what I'm doing? Did today even count? Have you looked back on the last year and gone, what was the point of all that? Maybe you've reflected a bit older in life and you've reflected back on your younger years and you wonder, where's it all gone? What was the point? Our toil is somewhat meaningless, he says. We punch in, we punch out. Most of our daily routine is pretty predictable, isn't it? You wake up, you engage in some form of hygiene. It might be a deodorant can, it might be a shower. You get some food in your belly, unless you're intermittent fasting, and so you're like holding off till 12. You jump in some form of transportation to go somewhere, perhaps you work, perhaps you study, maybe your transportation gets you out of the room to your children's room, and it is housebound you stay for the day, trying to find out tasks and activities to occupy them and to keep you out of prison. You work, you finish, you commute home. You were pleasantly surprised by a new song on the radio. Gee, that was wonderful. You eat some food, you close your eyelids, you sleep, you wake up the next morning, and you do it all again. The monotony of life, the endless cycle, the treadmill. And what do you really have to show for all your toil under the sun? Hevel? Not much. It's pretty empty. To prove his point, the preacher kind of gets some support from several angles. If you think, oh, this is not bleak enough, I'm not sure if it's true. Well, he says, listen to this. A generation goes and a generation comes. He's talking about the march of time. The earth remains forever. Sun rises. Sun goes down. Hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and it goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind. On its circuits, the wind returns. All streams run into the sea. The sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. Like creation, we are all on some kind of loop. We are on a ride, and listen, when it is our turn to finish, the ride continues. The earth remains. You did not make too much of a difference to this landscape around you. The mountains could tell thousands of stories of people, yet we won't remember them. Generations come and then go. The earth remains forever. Nothing really, really changes. Even itself, the earth, is restless, it is repetitive, it is this hub of activity, of movement, of the sun rising and giving light to everything and then racing back to go down to give the moon a chance to rise, only to start again on another side of the earth. The sun gets no rest, it does not cease, it continues. The wind, they are stuck on circuits. Incredible, you see it come up from the southerlies have happened. I'll give it time, they'll finish, and the northeast will happen. And it'll all go around and around and around. Eat, sleep, repeat, the same pattern. He says it's meaningless. Jerome said the irony of this verse, he says, what is more vain than this vanity? That the earth, which was made for humans, stays. But humans themselves, the lords of the earth, suddenly dissolve into the dust. That didn't quite make it into the Lion King circle of life. No wonder the teacher then says in verse 8, all things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. He says, life is hevel. The time marches on. It shows its uselessness. You see here, like the ocean, our senses are fed and are fed, but they are never full. The journey goes on, but we never arrive. Some of you, that's like you watching Lord of the Rings extended. The journey goes on. Do they ever get there? The eyes and the ears, which hear and see constantly, never find it enough. Things are so weary, he can't put it into words. It's unutterable. As the Rolling Stones said, I can't get no satisfaction because I try and try and try. Vaporless vapor. Friends, the teacher is trying to tell us that things don't really change. We're never really satisfied. And history's really never going anywhere. Look at verse 9. What has been is what will be. What has been done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which is said, see, this is new? It has already been in the ages before us. I think our current cultural context likes to think we're the most innovative people on the planet. In fact, I remember seeing a TED talk that said almost nothing has been invented yet. It was an incredible statement. We essentially, though, do new ways to do old things, don't we? Nothing's really new. We try and spice things up. We try and get off the humdrum monotony of life, of history. We try and bring something new in to make ourselves more unique. We have things like iPhones now. What once was able to fit in an entire room slips in your pocket. We are so unique and different. And yet, the majority of us, particularly in the Western world, spend our times scrolling our phones, sitting on couches, streaming media, working so our retirement is set up, then we die. Are we really that new? Is it really that different? Are you and I all that unique in history? We like to think we're new, don't we? Who remembers the rise of the emo kid? Hands up if you got a glimpse of this. Not if you got a glimpse of it in my life. These people, with whom I loosely associated for a season. A season that went too long. We're so unique, weren't we? So trailblazers. The dark hair and our fringes. Black cuffs. Skinny black jeans. Look like wet pants. Wetsuit pants. Listening to sad music. All looking the same though, weren't we? What about the trailblazer hipster? Whoa, there's a unique person. With the same etched facial hair as the rest of them. The glasses that are somewhat embarrassing. Flannelettes gave rise to leather jackets, even in Queensland, just so we could be cool. They really broke the mold, didn't they? There's nothing new under the sun. Newness can't fend off the stale reality of life's weariness, is it, can it? You think something new will help bring you out of the lull of the monotony. Why is it that some of us feel better after a haircut? I'm a new person. People change their wardrobe, they're a new person. Well, nothing's really new under the sun. Do you hear a sense of resignation in Kohelet's voice? Do you pick it up? He's looking around, he's like, nothing's really new. Nothing really changes. Time passes on. See, the prophets of old, they saw a time, the new heavens, the new earth. They were those who could read the unfolding of redemptive history, that there was an arc, there was a direction. God was doing something through the people Israel, the people of God, to tell the world something about himself. But Kohelet sees this and he carries much greater resignation. Time marches on. Nothing really changes. Things are never complete. History never moves. And listen, people are forgotten. You see that in verse 11? There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things later yet to be among those who come after. So people will forget what's been. So right now, the trend is away from skinny jeans to flared jeans as if that's new. And all those who lived in the 70s giggle. It is not new. We don't remember. The toil, the labor, the work that we did, moving from trivial things like fashion to the lives that we pour out, it is not remembered. Just give me the names of your great-grandparents and what they did. My grade 10 teacher thought that by the time he got near death, he would become immortal because science would have found a way to keep him alive. I presently still remember his name. But a couple decades, I'm not sure many of us will. He'll be forgotten. He'll pass through time. I experienced the irony of this in trying to recall the movie scene where the person says, the person says, "You will never forget me." And I can't for the life of me think who that person was and what the movie was in. And it proves this point. We just forget. Time moves on. Some of us, no. Kohelet, slow down. I am going to be a world changer. The world is going to know my name. Well, Kohelet says, sit down, have a listen. Lives are not remembered. Our impact is scarcely felt, says the teacher. Some of you say, no. Well, at least the future. We'll know people in the future. I mean, the future's bright. And we've got ways to codify and keep the memory living on of people. People like entrepreneurial drive of Elon Musk. The future is bright. We had the brains of Steve Jobs. We have the activism work of Meghan Markle, the Duchess of Sussex. Surely these people will be remembered. But listen, the future. People yet to come. Kohelet says, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after. Kohelet just said, look back and you can't remember anyone, but don't think there's hope in the future because everyone in the future will be forgotten too. Welcome to church. Vaporless vapor. Punch in, punch out. eat, sleep, retreat. The sun spins, the stream flows, the wind blows. It's one endless cycle. Time marches on, and you and I and the lives around us will be forgotten. Vaporless vapor, says the preacher. So what do we do? What does one do when they sit in that room and come into contact with this kind of reality? The reality that you and I do not want to engage in every single day, for it would be too crushing. You know, we need to bring reform. You know, we need to make it count. Education. If we, Darren, just knew the right things and we got everyone living the right way, then we could deal with the problems of the world and move towards a better humanity. Who's with me? And we all cheered. And Kohelet comes along. He speaks to us now in his own words. The narrator has finished his introduction on his content, and he allows Kohelet now to speak in fullness. And Kohelet says this about the idea of wisdom and education solving this gnawing sense that what I do does not matter. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem. I've applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. When you read under heaven, same phrase as under the earth. It means the same thing. Under the sun, sorry. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I've seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and is striving after the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said in my heart, I've acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were before me in Jerusalem. And my heart has led great experience of wisdom and knowledge. So he's got a degree that was better than you and I put together. Any degrees that we have in the room, this guy's way higher. I apply my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this too is also a striving after the wind. Kohelet speaks to us with royal authority. He's designating himself in this position of authority. We are meant to start thinking kind of Solomon-esque thoughts. This sounds like someone like Solomon, on high, all wise, all powerful. He has resources that you and I couldn't dream of. But he can't find rest within this frame. In fact, the constant search, wisdom, brings him only frustration and resignation. The paradox for Kohelet is this: the more you search, the less you find. It is but a striving after a wind. Have you ever seen someone try to catch a plastic bag on a windy day? Isn't it wonderfully hilarious when it's someone else? And they're so close. But the plastic bag does a dance. And the person is trying to grab it, trying to be a good citizen. It's trying to recycle. It's a futile effort sometimes, isn't it? Now imagine just trying to catch the wind. No bag, just wind. Kohelet says, that's what it was like. Pursuing wisdom and knowledge. Could never get a grip. Couldn't get a handle on it. He knew more wisdom than you and I will ever forget. He will forget more wisdom, sorry, than you and I will ever know. All the angles won't solve the ache in life, so what do we do with Kohelet at the moment? What he's told us, how do we process this? Well, I think in our book of Ecclesiastes, there's two ways. Firstly, I think what we'll discover is that we'll have a sense of resonance with a book like this. We'll have a sense of resonance. You should be having a degree of empathy with what Kohelet is speaking and sharing. You should be able to see perhaps similarities. Have you experienced some of his frustrations? Have you looked and wondered and tried to get and grab and find it that is falling short, slipping through your fingers? Have you felt some of his aches, some of the futility? Parents, have you finished the day and just wondered, did that matter at all? Students, have you come out of exams and gone, what is the point of this? It's not a hack at those who have done like a liberal arts degree. What is the point? I think we're going to find some resonance. Because we've got in Qohelet someone who is somewhat wise. He does speak true things. He positions stuff. He gets some things right. His understanding of the world in common grace, he picks up on some patterns. He speaks truth, but part of the truth, not the whole truth. His insight that looking to the things of this world as ultimate is ultimately doomed to fail. Well done. He's picked up on something. And I think we'll find some resonance with Qohelet, because Qohelet isn't here to bring the thin veneer that everything is awesome when in reality everything is painful and difficult. So if you're that person who has a feeling of skepticism or cynicism or pessimism, this should give you space to breathe. That life is in sunshine and lollipops. That the 97 threes of the world is not life. He's followed paths that you and I seek to tread down, and listen, he's made it all the way to the end, and he says it's empty. It's meaningless. It's vanity. And this is where someone like Qohelet can be really helpful for us in a series like this. We resonate with him, but in one sense, he's gone before us, because the trap that you and I face is this. We can still be setting ourselves and our lives on a particular trajectory to strive for things to make our lives matter and make our lives count. If I had a little bit more money, if things were just a little bit nicer, if the renovations could just get complete, if I could just get that new car, when I just finished the studies, if I looked a little bit better, if I was a little bit fitter, a little bit healthier, a little bit cooler, if more people liked me, if more people knew me, if more people followed me, if more people understood what I was about, a little bit more famous. If I had some more travel experiences, COVID, if I could experience the pleasures of life a little bit more, then I'd feel satisfied. Right now, I'm just held back. I'm held back. I can't get my license. I'm not able to travel. I don't have the money that I want yet, but if I just get a little bit more, maybe then meaning will land. Maybe these things will improve, and the sense of self I'm trying to deal with as well. Give me some meaning, bring me some point to it all. And the question that just kind of glares back at us is this. You say, yeah, I live giving my children the best education. And? No, I'm going to make a difference in the world and bring justice to those who are oppressed. And? I'll work out, I'll look good, I'll be known. And? For what point? You will die, you will be forgotten, and the mountains will remain, the sun will still spin, and life will carry on. So, Qohelet is here to say, listen, I've entered into the maze of life. I've had more experience than you, more wisdom than you, more insight than you. I've worked harder, had more sex, more money, more everything. And it was Havel. It was meaningless. So listen to my voice. Mastering life left him realizing how twisted and how lacking his grasp was. That's first thing, verse 15. The Rubik's Cube could not be solved. See verse 18, for in much wisdom is much vexation, for he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. The more Qohelet had listened, the more disillusioned he was. The more he knew, the more he lamented the problems of this world. I am relatively young as a pastor, but there is a true sense of an insight of increasing knowledge of how things are in the world. Does that not increase sorrow? Those who are older than me, have you not experienced this truth in your life? The more you know, increasing of sorrow. So what is Qohelet maybe then saying? Well, is he kind of telling me how not to fill the void of my life? Well, in one sense, yes. Yeah, I like how a pastor friend of mine, he described Ecclesiastes like this. Ecclesiastes, what Ecclesiastes is doing, it is digging a big hole. It is digging this big hole and says, nothing can fill the hole. You come along with money and it's like tipping a bit of dirt into the hole. You can't fill the hole. And so there's this big gaping hole, and any attempt to fill it up is hevel. It is absurd. It is irrational. So what will fill the hole of human experience? What fills this hole? And is here that Qohelet doesn't give us an answer. But the frame narrator does. And so we need his words to process Qohelet's properly. If you stay under the sun in your thinking, then Qohelet is exactly right. This is all vanity, hevel, vapor. But if you lift your eyes to live above the sun, to fear God, obey his commands, you will get an insight to how the hole is filled. What he's trying to tell us takes a long time to hear. You imagine a son speaking to father speaking to his son, and the son asks, Dad, what is the meaning, the purpose, the point? How do I gain in life? Father could say, well, son, fear God and obey his commands. Now, any switched on son is going to ask this question. Yeah, Dad, but what about this? What about living this way? What about money? What about career? What about women? What about? And so in the book of Ecclesiastes, what you have is the frame narrator giving you all the whatabouts. And he's positioning and presenting them before you, the what about this, what about this, what about this. And so he's taking the long time, the long route, because the human heart is hell-bent on making the things in this world mean the world to us. And so what he's doing, cleverly, slowly, is taking a long path to deal with all the whatabouts, so that when you're ready to hear them, what is it about, your heart is prepared. Albert Einstein said, if I had an hour to solve a problem, I'd spend 55 minutes thinking about the problem and 5 minutes thinking about solutions. I think that's kind of Ecclesiastes. So each week we're going to be dealing with the, yeah, what about? No, Darren, no, what about this in life? Isn't this what counts? And on Qohelet, will show us how it's all vapor. It's all meaningless. The chasing after the wind. It'll help us accept the fact that life is actually out of our control. That we cannot fully get a grip on it. You cannot tame it. You cannot move it. You cannot master it. If you think you've got it, it will slip through your fingers. You'll feel frustration, vaporless vapor. And if you're not a Christian, you're not following Jesus, this is a wonderful book for you to read. Because you'll find the resonance here. And I hope you get a sense of what the teacher is saying. And I hope that presents for you a hope that is found for the one who can fill the hole. Leads us to see a need in the person Jesus Christ. Jesus is the one who can enter into the mist, enter into the vapor of life, and be substance. Be something that can be held onto, to be grabbed, because he has come to grab us. Like mist, you can't see like fog, you can't see all the way to the end, but you can see just in front of you. God will lead us in this path, in this way. This is the message of the book, an exposure to the emptiness of the world so that you may get a grip on what matters most, life with God. So the digging has begun and the filling won't continue for now. Because next week we've got some more excavating to do. Let us pray.